People First Radio is a program about people, the society in which we live, and issues related to health and wellness.
As a province, the people of Manitoba are no longer satisfied with having people live in tents. Today is a day where we commit to a turning point. We're going to work together and ensure that everybody has a place to call home, and importantly, that you have the addictions and mental health services to succeed in living with a roof over your head.
Welcome to People First Radio. I'm Joe Pugh. Manitoba's government has a new plan to address homeless encampments. Its goal is to offer housing to the people living in them, one encampment at a time. You heard Manitoba Premier Wab Kanu speaking at a press conference announcing this plan January 14th. Overseeing that work will be Tessa Blakey-Whitecloud. She's about to start a new role as the Premier's senior advisor on ending chronic homelessness, and she spoke with me earlier this week.
Hi, I'm Tessa Blakey-Whitecloud. I'm the outgoing CEO at Salo Mission. I'll be winding that up on Friday, January 31st. And then on Monday, I'm starting as the Premier's senior advisor on ending chronic homelessness for the government of Manitoba under Premier Wab Kanu.
And there is a plan in place to respond to encampments in the province. Can you tell me maybe about the new elements that that plan brings to the table?
I think the core piece that this plan brings to the table is housing that is going to be brought online over the coming months and years to address particular needs of folks living in encampments today. So it's saying, you know, we can't actually solve people living in encampments. We can't offer them anything unless we can offer them housing. And so how do we make sure that that housing meets their needs and is sort of the first focus? So the first focus of this plan is bringing units online that meet the needs of folks in encampments and then working with folks in encampments to support them to move into that housing. And so, you know, we're coming from the sector, very excited to hear new units are a part of this. And this particular batch of units is dedicated to folks coming out of encampments, whereas there's still other contributions and efforts to make sure that social housing stock in general increases within the province.
And reading through the plan, I got the sense that the way this is intended to roll out is that it will be a targeted encampment by encampment approach. So reading through the plan, correct me if I'm wrong, but the impression is based on a number of factors, you'll decide like this is an encampment where we want to have no more encampment and move people into housing. And what you'll do is have a 30-day process. Can you tell me more about how that will work in the case of one specific encampment?
Sure. So partly it's who in the sector is ready to bring housing online and what population are they looking to serve? And then we'll work with outreach providers to say, okay, we're bringing housing units online for 2SLGBTQ folks, or we're bringing housing units online for Indigenous women, or we're bringing housing online for, family size encampments where folks want to be able to live together in a communal fashion. And then once that housing is online, we're going to work with outreach providers to identify who are the best fits encampment by encampment to move into housing. And that 30-day timeline is really about what hoops can government get out of the way, as well as how do we start to create momentum for people? Like, we're going to try to move you into housing in 30 days. Like, what can we do? What does that look like? What needs to happen? And we're really about making the housing opportunity the most attractive option versus staying in the encampment. So those housing units will have wraparound supports. So those housing units will have access to medical care if that's something that's needed, or maybe a managed alcohol program if that's what's needed. So we're trying to create a system where people in encampments today, A, have the hope that housing units are coming, can see that other encampments that they might walk by are starting to, you know, get moved into housing, and build that momentum to have people actually, you know, believe in their capacity to be housed. We know from other jurisdictions that when you actually make the housing attractive, 90% of folks living in encampments want to move into it. So, we're really hopeful that that 30-day timeline is about, getting all of the people at the table together to make that real for those people.
You touched on this a little bit in that answer, but how do you win over people's trust and get them to want to move into the encampment? And I guess maybe the other half of that question is, what can you do if they don't?
Yeah, so I think a big piece of this is relying on the relationships of trust that are already well established. We have wonderful outreach teams working in Winnipeg. It will be, as we move this plan outside of Winnipeg, figuring out who's doing great outreach work there. I'm sure there are people, I just don't know them yet. And they're already in relationship. They're already checking on people. They're already establishing that rapport. So they're going to lead the way in terms of understanding who's ready for housing, who wants housing, and how we make that real for folks. I think the other piece of this is less, if there's a safety concern or a fire concern, encampments already kind of experience being decommissioned and asked to move to a different location to mitigate those concerns. That might happen still moving forward, but the goal will always be that we're leading with housing options and that it's folks coming into that housing voluntarily, unless, of course, there's other concerns.
Now, what I took away from reading the plan were that the two things that it is maybe trying to bring to the table that you don't necessarily see in encampment responses are this kind of longer 30-day planned timeline, and the other part of it is acquiring the housing. On that front, can you tell me about, are these new social units being brought on board? Is the government stepping in to purchase other kind of just rental housing that already exists and operated as social housing? Can you tell me about that side of things?
So it's really a project-by-project basis. So some of the projects are more single-room occupancy supportive housing environments. Another one is a apartment building that hasn't been tenanted for a while that's going to be renovated to come back online. We're still actually looking for some of the buildings that we're working on. And so it's really going to be about getting more units into the system. So while the units might be old units that haven't been occupied for a long time, or might be brand new builds, or might be renovated units that have been not being used currently and are getting brought back online. But it's all about having new doors to put people into. We have a really low vacancy rate in Winnipeg, and so we know that we can't solve homelessness without actually addressing housing stock. And so that is the core beginning of this plan, is to say we need new units online if we want to get ahead of solving homelessness. But my job actually has kind of three parts. So one part is this encampment response. The second part is building out a larger strategy with the sector and all of the players, including private, including nonprofit, including foundation, including government, to say, how do we build a plan to stop, having chronic homelessness in our cities and our province more broadly, in the coming years? And so that's another piece. But the third piece of that, which really is, they all mesh together in a lovely Venn diagram, is working on intergovernmental departments, interdepartmental work across government to say, how do we reduce the amount of people coming into homelessness? So across Canada right now, the statistic is that for every one person we support out of homelessness, 1.5 people are slipping into it. So how do we get the government systems like incarceration, or the justice system, like the medical system, like child welfare systems, to reduce homelessness as a trajectory for people that it's serving? And so that will be a big piece of my role as well.
That is something I wanted to ask you about, and I guess the question is, how do you do that? How can you ensure that people aren't coming into homelessness at a faster rate than they can be housed?
Yeah, I think key is going to be looking at what are the ways that we know that right now some of those systems are creating homelessness or not seizing an opportunity when somebody is ready for housing. An example could be you don't get to leave incarceration until close to 10:30, but you need to show up for your rehab or detox bed by 8 a.m. And so that 2-hour missed window can lead people to needing to wait a whole day, and sometimes they choose to use during that day, and then they aren't ready for their path to recovery. Or another example could be, how payments are made with EIA. So sometimes if people start working a little bit, EIA needs to do a review, but that sometimes means that they miss rent payment. So could we pay rent and do the review, or just figure out different systems issues that are happening to make sure that we don't increase homelessness? So we'll be actually listening to the folks doing casework to hear what is happening in systems at an individual level, and then doing the work up the system to the macro level to be able to address that. And I'm a sociology professor and geek. Doing that systems work is really exciting for me, because that personal is political, political is personal is so true, right? So somebody's experience of a system failing them is a way for us to better understand how to change that system so that that isn't its outcome.
Now, reading through the plan, you get the sense, I believe it's the government's intention to start having encampment responses in the relatively near-term future. But a lot of what you described in terms of the other part of the problem, the low vacancy rate, the lack of social housing available, sounds, at least it sounds like the kind of thing that would take a lot longer to resolve. How do you reconcile those two things?
Yeah, so I think it's going to be really important to kind of try to balance my own time. So it needs to be that we're spending as much time on the long term as that short term response. And I think that this is one of the challenges for governments when their mandate, hopefully is 7 years here or longer. But you're trying to make strategic decisions that you might not always see the long term payoff of underneath your leadership. And so just feel super ecstatic that the NDP government of Manitoba is committed to addressing homelessness. And committed to doing that systems work, which will take us a couple of years to see the benefits of in terms of reductions of people coming into homelessness, while at the same time saying we can't just wait for that. The people that are currently experiencing homelessness need our support today. And so that's why the role is balanced to look at both of those things. How do we react? Or, how do we work downstream with people that are already experiencing homelessness to get them out of homelessness into the best supports possible so they can thrive, while at the same time change systems to reduce inflow into homelessness and make sure that we're working upstream so that less and less people have to have that experience altogether.
Are you ready though? Are you going to be able to do that with, like, in the case of one specific encampment, are the housing spots there, or how do you foresee
Yeah,
that
so
actually coming to
we'll be
be?
bringing on close to 30 housing units late February, early March. And so that will be our first tranche. And then there'll be another tranche coming on a couple months later and continue and continue. So certainly ready to get to, the sector together and talk about how this is going to work and then start getting those housing units online and the right folks from the right encampments into them.
You're listening to People First Radio. Tessa Blakey Whitecloud is about to start a new role as Senior Advisor on Ending Chronic Homelessness to Manitoba Premier Wahb Kanu. Earlier this year, the province outlined a plan to address homeless encampments by offering people living in them alternative housing. I'm speaking with Whitecloud about that plan. Another part of the plan involves having people to provide wraparound supports for those transitioning out of encampments. Can you tell me about maybe just the workforce? Are there enough people in the province who are trained to do this sort of work? How are you approaching that?
Yeah, so definitely there is a need to train more and more folks. There is a great many agencies, though, and they are doing phenomenal work. So there's a lot of places where people can learn from what other people are doing. There's really good examples of supportive housing. Silo Mission, where I'm leaving, has three supportive housing projects. Main Street Project has great supportive housing projects. West Central Women's Resource Center has great supportive housing projects. So there's a lot of spaces where we can learn and borrow. And we are ensuring also that it is nonprofits that are doing this supportive housing and doing the wraparound supports. So there's going to be a lot of jobs in this area in Winnipeg in the next little while coming online. But it's going to be a key part of those wraparound services and making sure that we actually give people an opportunity to thrive. One of the things that I really love is that so many of the folks that are doing this work in our sector have lived experience. And so they can really identify with folks where they're coming from and where they're at, but they also help us be better decision makers. And so ensuring that we are listening to folks with lived experience through this process and connecting with people with lived experience through this process is going to continue to be integral.
You're coming into this role having worked in the nonprofit sector for an organization that provided supportive housing. What are the things that, when you were doing that work, you wished you could be in the government's ear about, the things you wished you could get change about that presumably you will work towards now?
I think one of the key things is making sure that medical care comes to people where they are comfortable to go, as opposed to insisting that people go to medical care in spaces that they're not always comfortable accessing. Really breaking down the barriers for people so that our, whether it's social assistance or whether it's other accessibility services or whatever it can be, that people have what they need. One of the things that bothers me the most is when people are experiencing a medical issue and have to receive home care in shelter. So really making sure that we have avenues for people to connect to medical shelters or medical facilities and supports, addressing those issues, as I mentioned, the detox timing issue that I already kind of talked about, creating more transparency and data sharing between agencies and government systems so that, you can get a notification that somebody you've been caseworking is maybe leaving a hospital and you should check in on them or leaving incarceration, but also doing the work ahead of time before they leave those systems to get things like ID and income and housing set up. So really kind of seizing the moment with somebody coming out of homelessness, as opposed to if they're in hospital or if they're in incarceration, like we know where they are. Let's do the work with them then, as opposed to waiting until they get discharged into the homeless sector.
for people listening who aren't from Manitoba, I'm wondering if you could just paint me a picture of what exactly, or maybe the data you're working with, the numbers, the problem you're trying to solve. Is it a correct understanding that the estimates are there are probably about 700 people in the province living in encampments right now?
So 700 people in the province living in encampments, which means that they are living in tents or tent villages, but are not accessing overnight supports at all. Then there's about, and that's a part of a broader number, so that's across the province. In Winnipeg alone, there's estimated to be about 3,500 people experiencing homelessness. So the numbers are quite staggering. And we know that there's also a lot of folks that are in housing that is substandard. And so across the province, it is about figuring out, you know, how we have more social housing, how we have a higher standard of housing across the board, and how we can support people kind of coming out of encampments as needed. On the flip side, though, Winnipeg and Manitoba, you know, have a lot of great initiatives to support people experiencing homelessness. So it's also going to be about how do we better resource those initiatives, whether that's, you know, in part, making sure that there's sharing of like a community of practice, of policies, of processes, of frameworks, so that people don't have to reinvent things. Again, they can just borrow. But also, you know, how do we support them to build staff resiliency, to build staff retention, et cetera. So it's going to be that whole One Manitoba plan, so that we can do that work together.
What were some of the inspirations for this plan from other jurisdictions, if they came from there, or just from talking with various people in this sector?
So I didn't get to write the plan. So I am starting with this plan, and I will work with the teams to write the longer term plan. But I was not a part of writing the encampment strategy plan.
Coming into it, are you? Do you feel like it is the right plan? Are there parts like, do you feel like it is unachievable?
I totally think it's achievable. And it starts with housing, and the answer is always housing, and it's housing with supports. And this plan starts with housing with supports. And that's why I feel comfortable, you know, putting my name and my career behind it, because I think that we can't address homelessness without new units. And those new units have to be suitable for the people that are looking to move into them. And so that's a really exciting component of this plan, as well as saying there's a 30-day timeline. And yes, that 30-day timeline is to hopefully provide motivation to folks, you know, that are looking at moving into housing. But that 30-day timeline is really about what bureaucratic red tape is in the way. Like, what is stopping people from getting housing once the housing is available? And how do we put pressure using that 30-day timeline on government systems to ensure that we're getting all of our ducks in a row and nobody is staying in homelessness longer than they need to because of a paper, you know, filing issue.
It's interesting you talk about the timeline from that perspective. I think from covering various encampments and reading news stories about various encampment clearouts, oftentimes the timeline is sort of, you're told you have to get out of here in, if you're lucky, 3 days. Can you tell me about maybe if encampments have been cleared out in the past in Manitoba, if that's an issue you've seen play out from your role, you've been kind of watching from your role in the nonprofit sector, what that is like, you know, in the not this plan version of how it's played out.
Totally. It's devastating. Like, people lose connection to all of their supports. People lose connection to what was keeping them safe. People lose, right? So to know, like, an encampment or a building, even if it's being a building, sometimes get decommissioned for health or safety risks. And like, if we don't have enough notice to create safety plans with those people or alternative opportunities with those folks, we can be putting them more in harm's way. And so again, this 30-day timeline is, we hope, more time and more clarity for the bureaucracy side of things on what is reasonable, but also that they need to be getting an alignment with these timelines so that that becomes a feasible goal. Again, it's once that housing exists though, right? So it's not going to necessarily be, you know, we picked an encampment, it's 30 days. It's, we're doing the work to bring the housing online. This encampment is identified as a fit for this housing. Are they a fit for this housing? Yes, they say they're a fit. Okay, 30 days starts now. So it's going to be a little bit interesting to kind of see the rollout of it and be a part of the rollout. But it brings me a lot of hope that there's recognition that we can do nothing about encampments in our country, in our province, in our cities, without bringing units online that are designated and designed for people who are living in encampments today.
This is People First Radio. Manitoba's government has a new plan to address homeless encampments. Tessa Blakey-Whitecloud is about to start a new role as the senior advisor to Premier Wab Kanu on ending chronic homelessness. She joined me earlier this week.
So you identify the encampments, you try and bring the housing online, you start this 30-day timer. Hopefully, from your perspective, the people who are in the encampment go into the housing. You know, even earlier on, you mentioned like 90% of people, when we make the housing attractive, they want to go into it. What happens to the other 10% of people?
I think that's going to be really person-centered in our approach. So trying to understand, is it a mental health issue? You know, I've come to know doing frontline work, many vets were like, I just can't sleep inside. So what's that about and what are the alternatives and what does that look like? Is it a more of a, well, I don't actually want to move into housing here because I have a home community somewhere else. Okay. So a big part of this announcement was also a bunch of flex funding. So what does it mean to get you back to your home community? What does it look like to get you back to your home community? What resources do you need to make that happen? So it really is going to be figuring out with that 10% of folks, what is it that's in the way, and then trying to problem solve that.
There's something about this whole issue that seems like the idea of a government response to clearing out encampments by offering people places to live. It seems so
obvious,
but also it seems so that does not seem to be something that is being tried a lot of places. Can you help me reconcile those two things?
I think that there's, you know, a recognition. So you asked earlier, like, what has inspired this plan? There was a delegation that visited Houston. There was a recognition that Houston had a totally different vacancy rate. And so we couldn't try to replicate things that are working in other jurisdictions when Winnipeg's vacancy rate, I think, is under 1.3% right now. So there's literally not enough units. And every month, about 100 units in Winnipeg become available in the deeply affordable market, but there are 3,500 people competing for them. And so there's just no way to get ahead in that. And so there was a recognition by the government that, okay, our first step is getting units online. And we want to address folks that are unsheltered first in those units because they're not necessarily connected to coordinated access. We still also want to get units online for coordinated access and folks connected to shelters, et cetera. But recognizing that who is suffering the most right now, and that is folks that are trying to sleep outside in our winters. We've hit minus 50 with the wind chill. So like, how do we make that a priority? And so, yeah, that's interesting. I think it's, you know, we've called a lot. I've been a huge advocate in my 3.5 years-ish at Sylomishin and my years before at One Just City that we need more units. We have 3 social housing units for every 20 low-income people in Winnipeg, as an example, whereas like other cities like Calgary has 9, Regina has 8. Those might be getting out of date. Those stats are from 2022, but still, like, we know that those housing units missing are a challenge. And so I'm just so grateful that this plan starts with housing and that it has a continued trajectory towards getting more housing online, but also is bringing everybody together to do that work.
Now, if this is an issue of housing and it's going to take, you know, years and years and years to get enough new housing stock online such that the issue of people experiencing homelessness is negligible, or if it becomes like it is in, say, Finland or something, how do you maybe depoliticize or like detach the act of getting new social housing online so it's not a situation where in 5 or 10 years people get tired of the current government and vote in a new one and then they slash funding to social housing or something like that?
I think one of the things that's super important to recognize is that supportive housing is significantly cheaper. So supportive housing is a fiscally conservative response. And so it's about making sure that in the transition, and, you know, I worked with the previous conservative government as the leader of Sylomishin then, and I hope that if the government changes in the future, they'll continue to work with experts from the sector who are going to be able to show them, we're going to reduce ambulance costs, we're going to reduce police call costs, we're going to reduce fire and safety costs, we're going to increase people's capacity to heal at home and reduce hospital costs. We're going to, right? And so it's like supportive housing has been demonstrated financially again and again and again to make more sense. On top of that, it also gives people an opportunity to thrive and have dignity, and then they turn around and contribute to their community. So it's not only morally the right choice, it's financially the right choice. And so there's kind of no way around doing it. And so I really hope that we will have enough time as a NDP government in Manitoba to demonstrate that so solidly that no one would want to undo the great work that's going to happen over the next 7 years.
Now, you're just about to start this new role, so maybe it's a little bit early, but how do you define success in maybe your first year? If we were to have this conversation in January 2026, what would you hope to have accomplished by then?
I would really love to be able to point to some systems changes that are going to reduce inflow into homelessness and be able to identify that change for you. I would like to be able to demonstrate how many folks have moved out of encampments into housing successfully and stayed housed and thrived with the right supports. And I would really like to be able to tell you that we're well on our way, if not already in draft one, of a strategic sector-wide, private sector, everybody at the table, one Manitoba plan with all of the players working in the homelessness serving sector that are just so phenomenal coming together to decide how we're moving forward to make change.
Is there anything else you think it's important to bring to this conversation today?
I think one of the things that I'm really pleased by and one of the reasons why I was interested in taking this role on is that in all of the conversations with Premier Wapkinew, he talked about wanting to have a compassionate response. And in all of the conversations with Minister Bernadette Smith, who's just a phenomenal advocate for housing and homelessness and addictions, those are all her portfolio. She talks about wanting to transform generations and offer healing and capacity for people to be able to, you know, change lives for the long term. And so they're in this with their hearts and they're in this for the long term. And I think that that's a vision I can get behind.
Tessa, thank you so much for taking the time.
Thank you.
Tessa Blakey-Whitecloud is the newly appointed senior advisor on ending chronic homelessness to Manitoba Premier Wapkinew.
People First Radio, People First Media, and People First Stories are community media projects of Vancouver Island Mental Health Society and are produced in Nanaimo, British Columbia. The opinions expressed do not necessarily represent the views of Vancouver Island Mental Health Society or its broadcast, podcast, and social media partners.